All right. It's good to see you all. Hafidei and Kasalelia Mainko, and a few other languages that we've been stuck in the middle of for the last year and a half. A lot of things have changed. We've been really busy since the last time that we've seen you. I know that when we last left you, and we're last telling you about it, we were kind of stuck in the heart of COVID, and the fear and threat of COVID really did so much damage out in the Pacific Islands and really to mission work in general. But before we get into that, I want to just kind of carry you through our journey up to this point. So this was us in Pohnpei. And just to remind you where we're working here, if you look at the dot over here on the side, we'll focus in on that a little bit closer up here at the top. This is Micronesia. And so the islands that we have been working in are the Federated States of Micronesia. And we continued to work there, but we also added some other work that we didn't have before. So we spent a lot of time in Guam. We didn't expect to this last time. We thought we were just going to be flying through. In fact, when we actually went out, we had a ticket that said Pohnpei on it. But they stopped us in the airport at Guam and said, no, I'm sorry, we're still locked down. It's still closed. So many things changed that we didn't expect. But as missionaries, you just have to be ready to work where you are. So this was us when we first started out raising support. And as you can tell, we've kind of grown a little bit over the years. This was us when we first set foot full-time in 2017 on the islands. And this was the last group that went out. This was my son Gavin and Piper, and then myself and my wife. So when we arrived in Guam, the Treats had already been working in Guam. And they had been there for a little while, and Joey was doing some helping with the preaching there in the Assen congregation. We had another group that was coming, another family, the Phillips family, that was going to be joining us shortly. They arrived just a few weeks after we arrived, and we began to work together. But leading up to that point, we, as I told you before, we had been dealing with a lot of chaos from COVID. So we went in originally, and we were trying to figure out, we put our names on a list to be able to get onto the island. And then after a month and a half, that list was destroyed. And so we added our name to the next list. And we moved our way up on the list. And then the federal and state government began arguing about what was going to happen there and who controlled the borders. So again, that list was destroyed. And there started to be a third list. Now, as the third list was started, we actually had a friend of ours that made it onto the island. So we said, all right, give us your secret, because we have to get back out there and we have to get to work. So she said the only way that they're going to let anybody in is if you're already in Guam, you're setting ready to go the second that they open the quarantine and the second they open that list to go in. So at that point, we began discussing with our overseers and discussing with other supporters, and we knew we had to be on Guam. That's the only way this is going to happen. So when we arrived on Guam, as I told you before, we were kind of stopped at the border. And so they said to wait, and we would tell you what was going to happen next. They completely closed the quarantine facility. They completely shut off everything there. And the federal and state government began a serious, heated argument that ended up with the federal government putting the entire state government in jail. So that was kind of chaotic to have the governor, the lieutenant governor, and everyone in the jail. And we knew they had a few things they were going to have to work out on their own before we could actually get to the island. So we put our head down and we started to work in Guam. And we saw there was so much work that needed to be done in Guam, so many things that could be done there. The congregation, there was already a congregation there in Guam. This Assen congregation is the name of the congregation. They've been there since the late 60s. But when we arrived, it was they had lost a lot of members for different things that had happened over the years, and they many members had passed away, and it was very small. There was probably 12 to 15 people that were there. In fact, by the 2 weeks when the Phillips showed up, the missionaries almost equaled the amount of the congregation there. So we knew there was going to be a lot of work there. So we started looking at some of the tactics and some of the things that we used when we were working in the Pacific Islands. Well, I mean, in the Federated States of Micronesia. We thought about how we bonded the congregation and how we needed them to make this connection and feel like they were involved, feel like they were an active part of the church and not just someone that was there to be entertained or someone that was there just to listen to someone else talk. So we started learning more about the congregation and learning more about the people in the congregation. Now, this congregation is very unique in that it's made up of many different types of people from different backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, different class backgrounds. Some of the ones that we had represented is there's a large military presence on the island. The north part of the island is Air Force. The west part of the island is the Navy. And then there are others that are dispersed about there. There's a Marine presence that's also coming in. One of the outreach that we saw that we could do is to these young people that were coming in, young military men and women. When they come in, they feel very disconnected. They don't have family there. They've left their family behind. They've left their church family behind. And they really need that connection. They feel really lost, for lack of a better word, lost at sea, which is really where they are. So we saw that opportunity to reach out to them, to be their surrogate families, to carry some of them out to eat with us, to spend time with them, to have studies with them, to help strengthen them. We also opened our home for Thanksgiving. This is our Thanksgiving meal that you see here. We had some of the military people that came, and they also joined us for Christmas later in the year. So that was a wonderful opportunity to see that connection and make those connections. And as a result, they felt more involved in the church, more involved in with the rest of the people there. And some of them began teaching classes. Some of them began leading singing. Some of them began leading prayers and things like that. So we had made that connection to tie them in. Another group that's there, we have a lot of locals that are the Chamorro people that were there. Now, a lot of times they feel very separated from the Americans that are there. They don't feel connected to them. They kind of stay in a different area. And we wanted to make sure that as the church, we had those connections together. So when we did things, we also tried to include them, tried to work. Their culture is a little bit different than ours, but they still have that built-in hospitality. So we tried to tie them in. We had others that were there from that had been displaced because of COVID, because of the things that were happening in FSM. There was a large Chukis presence that was there that had different type of compounds that they had set up. Chukis are very poor in general, and a lot of times they didn't feel comfortable in a building such as this because that's not what they're used to. So we had to work with them and make them know that they were included. We're all equal in Christ. We're all united in Christ. We had a Filipino presence that was Filipino presence that was very large there. And we started working with them and talking to them. They also quite often feel like outsiders. So in short, we spent a lot of time doing that bonding, making those connections with the different people and helping them make connections with themselves. And just as we saw in the in Micronesia, in Federated States of Pohnpei and Chuuk, we saw those churches grow. We saw these congregations grow also. We also noticed that there was a large group of teens. Now, again, they were from these different areas, and they had not done a lot of intermingling. They usually stayed with their section. So if they were Chamorros, they stayed with their Chamorros. If they were Americans, they stayed with the Americans. So as starting a teen group, we created those bonds within the teen group also. And we saw those friendships grow, especially for our children that were there with Gavin and Piper. They were missing that connection because they had been moved around so much. And they also played a pivotal role in making those connections within those teen groups. Christy and Joanna Phillips started a teen group, a teen girls class that they taught, and it went over very well too. It helped break those cultural bonds in Christ. So we saw that group begin to grow. We also did another thing that we had been doing in Pohnpei, and we started training some of the men. When we first began worshiping there, Joey was doing some of the preaching, as I had mentioned. But before that, it was only one man and his son that was really doing all the activities of the church. They would lead the singing, they would teach the class, they would lead the prayers, they would serve the Lord's Supper, they would preach. So this man and his son were the only ones doing all that. But we saw all these other men in the congregation that would, if given the opportunity, we thought might step up and begin doing this. So we asked them, we began talking to them, encouraging them to take these roles. The first ones to really step up were those young military men that we had mentioned before. They began leading singing and leading prayers. And then we had, from watching them, we had some of the Chamorro men. We had one of the Filipino men that began teaching class. So we really wanted to see that congregation grow, and we did. We were able to see that growth. By the time, within about a year that we had been spending there, really before the borders opened to Pohnpei, the church had already grown to about 50 or 60 members. Some of those were brought back in. We had 13 baptisms within the first few months, so some of those were new Christians and their families. So it was wonderful to see that growth, to see that congregation that was already there strengthen. And we are encouraged to hear that even though we've been back, even as we've been back here in the States, that's continuing to happen. So we hope that continues to happen. And we'll do everything that we can from this stateside to be able to do that. Now, when we settled in on the island, the north part of the island, the Treats lived in the north part. We lived in the central part, and the Phillips lived in the bottom part, which we didn't plan that. That's just the way everything worked out. But it also worked very well in trying to spread the gospel and trying to work with groups there. We began going down to the south part of the island and doing things with the Phillips, and trying to find out more about that area, because that area is less modern than the northern area. That area, it feels more like the other work out in the FSM that we worked with in the past. One of the things that we quickly found, we were actually just visiting an old fort that was there. And as we were leaving, we saw a man selling coconuts for $5. Now, if you come from an island that's full of coconuts, that's probably not going to catch your eye. But for some reason, we felt called to go over and speak to that man. And so I went over to speak to him and talk to him, and Wade was with me, and we found out a lot. We had a door opened for us, and we found out something about the island that is a great need. We were told that that in 2019, some men came forward and said that there was a big issue with clergy abuse on the island, that in the Catholic Church. And that continued to spread. Within the next year, they had about 300 cases of people that came forward and told that all this was going on. And because of that, many people who had always connected, Guam is a very Catholic island. So many people who had always connected God and Catholicism were one, that really, they were really disheartened. They were really thrown off from the church. So we saw that as an opportunity to tell them, to show them the Church of the Bible, to make that disconnect between Catholicism does not own God. And we make that disconnect and to speak to them. And as we started to do that, we saw that was going to be a great opportunity. We met with this man, Edwin, and one of his friends, Ben. There was 14 of them that had been abused when they were right in between elementary school and middle school, so around the ages of 10 and 12. That they had all been abused. And as a result, as they grew up, some of the people from that group had committed suicide. All of them had gone into some force of violence and drugs. Just many things had happened in their life that they were very broken people. But he was very willing to sit and have discussions with us. Now, his speech was very flowery, so it would be a very different Bible study than you're used to here in the States. But we were able to open the Bible with him and discuss with him, and especially with this man, Ben. Oh, I need to show you on this one, not the one behind you. This man, Ben, we had studies with he and his wife, Sabrina, multiple studies there. And they are, again, Ben had had many problems with the law. He had been in and out of prison. But we began to show him the gospel within the Bible. And they began to open their heart and see a different world than the world that they had grown up in, of fear and of hate. And we are praying for that group very much. The Phillips had tried their best in July. We were not able to make it out there with them then, but they were trying to have a gospel meeting in that area, but because of some political things, they weren't able to. So we're hoping to, in the future, to go back out there and have that gospel meeting with them. And we would love to start a congregation there on the south side of the island ministering to those people. Most of those cases are focused on that south part of the island. Now, in August, of 2022. Well, actually, let me back up a little bit. In July of 2022, the COVID hit the island for the first time. Now, there was a great rebellion on the island because, according to the people there, COVID was brought back, and I don't hold it against Disneyland, but COVID was brought back by the president's wife going to Disneyland and not going through quarantine when she came back. But whether that was the case or not, COVID hit on a Monday morning, but it was the first week of a cultural show they were having there. Each one of the islands got a specific day that they were able to show their culture in food and dance and speech and all of those things. Well, it happened on the Monday. And so they had been making plans for 2 years. They had a COVID task force that was prepared. They were sitting down. They knew exactly how to shut everything down, how to make everybody stay at home. But there was a big rebellion that said Pohnpei had their Monday, Chuuk wants their Tuesday. So they threw all that to the side and went ahead with their cultural thing on Tuesday. Well, on Tuesday, they had about 400 cases. But Koh Rai also wanted their day because this is only once a year. And so Koh Rai had their day on Wednesday. So as a result, when people from the CDC came in the next week, they said everyone they tested had COVID. And so they just left the island and said, everyone has it now. There's nothing we can do. So that was bad enough, but good for us, because soon after that, they said, well, there's no reason to have the doors shut anymore. If everyone on the island has COVID, open the doors. So I bought my ticket right then. Right after that, when they saw that no one was really getting very sick from COVID, because they had a light strain at that point, they started another rebellion, and they said, we've been shut down, we've been cut off from our family all these times, for all these years, and this is lighter than a cold. This is something that hasn't affected us at all, as much as the flu that comes through all the time. So then they started rebelling again, until 2 weeks later, the vice president died of COVID. And so then they said, oh, wait a minute. There were very few deaths, but that was enough to cause great dissension on the island. But as a result, both task forces were done away with, and the borders were open for any vaccinated individual. So at that point, I was on the plane and heading back to work at Pohnpei. When we arrived at Pohnpei, it was wonderful to see that the church was still meeting, the church was still strong, that they had really missed us. They were surprised that I still remembered any Pohnpeian when I led my first song that I was in singing in Pohnpeian. They would say, oh, we thought you would forgot us. I was like, I talk to you guys every week. Why do you think that I had forgotten you? And so then I returned. So one of the things about the island culture, if you're maybe unfamiliar with it, is there's to defend your honor, someone will say something against you, and then you defend it with some sort of witty quip, and then they defend back. Well, so my defense back to that was, you've had 2 years. Why are you still speaking Pohnpeian? You should have perfect English by now. So that kind of broke the barriers between us, and then we were brothers, and it was so wonderful to see each other again. It was so wonderful to see those families. Now, of course, they had also had so many things happening over those last 2 years. We had one of the men of our congregation who was a very important member of the congregation. Not that everyone is not important, but he was my main translator. He had passed away while I was gone. It was heartbreaking to see that. So we had those moments, especially that first night of heartbreak. We had a brother of our preacher. He had passed away while I was gone. The life expectancy in the FSM is about 45 years old. So it's very common, especially with the declining health care, with problems, many health problems like high blood pressure, diabetes, things like that, that's totally uncontrolled. It's very common for men that we considered still young to pass away. So anyway, that was that hurt a lot to hear that, but we as the Bible says, we shed tears, we wept with those who wept. But then we began to talk about the work there and how we can strengthen the work there. And we began doing that. So during that time period, just to give you an overview of what was going on through the months of September all the way to really March, I was going back and forth between the islands. So I would, in the month of September, I worked in Pohnpei. And then the month of October, I was back in Guam. and then we were going back and forth. So if you see, it was quite a journey. And we really appreciate the support of the congregation here, because we could not have done that. And I'm not sugarcoating that at all. It could not have happened, period, without the support of this congregation here. But as a result, I was really able to work on three islands at once. And we continued the work without really a pause in each one of those places. My second trip that I was going back in November, you know, I said we were there in September, and then I was going back in November. 2 days before we got the flight information, I was looking through the flight information, and they had made it 18 and under could come vaccinated or unvaccinated. So 2 days before we left, I went to Piper, and I said, "Piper, are you ready to go back to Pohnpei?" And she said, "Yes, just let me get packed and let me get on the way." So Piper and I went back the second time. And this is wonderful, because one thing that many of you may not know about the culture is it's not culturally accepted for me to be able to have a study with the lady. It's not culturally accepted for me to be able to sit and talk with even the ladies of the congregation on my own. That goes against culture there. So with Piper being able to be there, then as the two of us, we could speak to all of those ladies. We could have some of those studies. And also Piper, they felt comfortable having one-on-ones with her. So it was wonderful to be able to do that, to help strengthen them in that point, because many of them had to deal with a lot of things on their own over that two-year period. So it was wonderful for Piper to be there. She got to also spend a lot of time with the children. She was able to help teach the classes. Another wonderful thing that we learned while we were there, and I just noticed I'm using the word wonderful a lot, so I'll try to look at my thesaurus a little bit better. But one of the things there is the children's class. When we left, Christy had created enough curriculum for her to last a few months. We didn't expect her to last a few years. But she had not only continued to teach on Sunday morning, but she had also started a Wednesday night class. So it's wonderful to see that Letty, that's this lady that you see here down at the bottom, she had really taken it upon herself to not wait on us to get back, which is what we want. We want the people that are living there to be able to do everything on their own. She took it upon herself to start teaching those classes, and also to train other ladies to also teach those classes, have them sit in there with her. So Piper was able to sit in on the class and help teach those children there, and it was great to see that how much they had grown up and that they were all still active in the church. About a week that I was there, you know, as a missionary, sometimes you want to cover everything, you think you've got everything covered, but you don't know until you're not there. Now, one of the things that I had forgotten to cover, when I arrived, they met me that first night that I met with them Wednesday night, and they said, "Oh, we have some people here for you to baptize." And so I started talking to them, and I said, "Now, we've talked about this before, that I don't have to be the one baptizing them, that you can baptize them, that especially Oscar can baptize, any of you can baptize them." And they said, "Oh, we had forgotten that." And I said, "Well, how long have they been waiting?" "Oh, just like almost 2 months, something like that." So I began talking to them. I quickly, on Sunday morning, set aside my time to meet with Casmina and Gibson and to sit and talk with them. Now, as I sat and talked with them, I began to see that they had done some thorough Bible studies with them. They had gone through some of the Back to the Bible books that many of you may be familiar with, but they had also done other studies of other things, and they had a very solid foundation already built of the Old and the New Testament, a very solid understanding of the gospel, and then also understood counting the cost. So it's wonderful to see the indigenous congregation that's doing that work, that's having those Bible studies, that has the ability to, as we had hoped, to start spreading that word and continue to spread that word. Another thing that we learned when we sat and studied with them is that one of the other members, Ricky and Cassandra, his wife, had also studied with them about the family. Now, the culture is very different. I've spoken on this before. The families are very different. Just an example of it. On the island of Pohnpei, when a child is born, it's not the matriarch of the area gets to decide where that child goes. It doesn't necessarily stay with its parents. So when that child is born, it may go to an aunt, may go to an uncle, may go to a different compound, may go to a different family. So the idea of a nuclear family, we spend a lot of time showing them the family of the Bible, to showing them how God wants the family to be. And it was wonderful to see that this study had already happened, that Ricky and Cassandra had already talked to them about being parents. Fortunately, both of the they had two children, but they were both theirs, so they had both been set with them. So we were able to start working on that dynamic and showing them in the Bible the verses from Ephesians and things like that of the what a parent should do, how a parent should raise a child, and a parent's responsibility and a child's responsibility. So again, that had already been done. So the that Sunday, afternoon, we went to the water, and we had we had first a marriage ceremony, and then right after the marriage ceremony, we had a baptism. So it was wonderful to see that the congregation there is doing what we had always hoped and prayed that they could, that they are not only keeping things going within themselves, but are also spreading the gospel and are also furthering the congregation and strengthening the congregation. And as I mentioned before, we had had losses. And we had had a lot of losses over the years, and I could tell stories about each one of these men. They were all so active in the church. They were all such a big part of the church. But one important man right here down at the bottom, not that they're not all important, but his name is Hermes Chalamet. And he was the sole preacher on the island of Chuuk. We had plans in 2020 to start training up a younger man, another man there that was there. Joey Treat had worked with him a little bit. And I had plans to go back in March or April to work with him, to have one as a backup in case anything happened to Hermes. Well, Hermes passed away in October of 2020. And as a result, because of the makeup of the island and the culture of the island, they have a violent culture, and quite often different areas of even the same neighborhood won't have anything to do with each other. In fact, one of Hermes' sons, we started having Bible studies, his youngest son was translating for me, and we asked his middle son if he would go with us, and the first place we named, he said, "Oh, I can't go there, they'll kill me." And so I kind of laughed a little bit like Brother Jenkins did. I didn't know what to say about that. But then I spoke about another place. "Oh, I can't go there. They'll kill me." And I said, "Really? Last is the youngest. Will they kill Urson?" He said, "Yes, because of things he had done when he was younger, that he cannot even walk through that area without a target on his head." And so we found out that there's many places like that in the culture. So Hermes had broken all those barriers all those years. And as the church, everyone met together inside those doors. But when he passed away, they all went back to their clans. They all went back to their idea of, "We don't like this person." It's like Hatfields and the McCoys times 10. Everyone's is broken apart. So we saw that there's a lot of work that's going to have to be done there. To tell you what extent it goes to, when we had a VBS there, we've had multiple ones, but the last VBS we had there, when we brought the children's pictures in, and these are kids between the ages of maybe 4 all the way up to about 12, every single picture had children putting gang signs up. We had gang signs in every picture. We didn't realize it until we brought it back to the States and showed it to some people. So it's a very tough environment. It's a very hard environment, and it's very close to our heart. Because as you know, Joey has spent a lot of time there, I've spent a lot of time there, and others have spent a lot of time there. So at that point, it became one of our main goals is we had to get back out to Chuuk. We had to try to fix this. There has to be, God can work through us to try to repair some of these things that have been happening. Because that was a congregation of about 30 to 40 people, and now when we checked back, we had had a hard time communicating with them when we finally did talk to someone on the island. They said there was one family that met there, and that was the one that we had started to train. And they had the Lord's Supper there, and then they would leave, and that no one else had even been to the building. Even the family, Hermes' family, had contention with that family that was there because they thought they were moving in to their land. So anyway, we needed to get back out to the island. Before we do that, I wanted to really quickly talk about some of the men that are there. This is Osser. Before we left the island, he had gone to Fiji for 2 years and had been trained to be a preacher, gone through a preacher training there. And we had started working with him. We were in a rotation. My sons and I were in a rotation preaching with him. He thought he was, he had gotten back to the island in November. So he had had 4 months of really on-the-ground training, and he thought we were going to be gone for 2 to 3 months, and then when it ended up being 2 years, we were really worried how he was going to make that transition and how that was going to work. But he did very well. He was continuing to make lessons. He was continuing to work with it. During the COVID time, I worked with him a lot and developed lessons, but I never knew how the presentations were going to be, how he was going to present that. Because a lot of times, especially with the newer people there, they would just read. And in that hot climate, that would not go over very well to just sit and read. So it was when I arrived, I heard Osser wanted me to preach, of course, right off the bat. But I said, no, I'm just a visitor now. I want to see how things go here in the island. I don't want you to hand the reins back over to me. I want to sit back and watch. And he presented two very good sermons on Sunday and Wednesday night. So that was wonderful to see. This is his sister, Letty, that I talked about before, and I had already mentioned the classes there, that she's doing a very good job teaching. But we didn't want to have the same mistake that we had happen with Hermas, so we started training up another preacher. Osser is past 45, so you know we never know what might happen. So we started working with this family, Ricky and Cassandra. We tried to send them back out to Fiji like we did with Osser, but because of COVID restrictions and many other things out on the islands, that was not going to be a case. So we had a man from Midland, Texas, who was going to pay for a scholarship for Ricky to go out to Fiji. But since that didn't happen, he said that we could reallocate that money to get internet in Ricky's home and to get Ricky a laptop. Now, Ricky hardly ever left the jungle, so we got that laptop to them, but it took a lot of training. The way that I've told other people, it was kind of like trying to teach a fish how to knit. But we finally got him to the point where he could do very good manipulation on there. So he started with the WVBS program. They have a school program that carries you through the Bible. And we tied him into the Pacific Islands Bible College, which we've all worked with already. And he was familiar with. He had already done 6 classes, I think, in it. And then also, he started with the World Bible School program to be able to introduce that to other people. So we're really, I guess you could say that he's being preacher homeschooled, but he's doing a very good job, and that continues to today. I'm still working with him on that, and I hope to pull him through that whole program. We already started working on sermon preparation and sermon presentation on hermeneutics, and he's doing a very good job. A lot of it was beyond his reach, but because I've worked with him so much, I've been able to really help work with him so that he's understanding what's going on. And we really look forward to he also beginning to preach with Osser. And things should go very well. And I want you to all prayerfully stay with me on that to continue things there. Well, another thing that we had, and I'll get back to Chuuk in just a minute, but a very pivotal part of that was this man right here. Stacy and Kathy Ferguson have been working with Chuuk for many more years than we have. And so we talked with the PIBC group, and they knew of the issues that were going on in Chuuk. So I and Stacy and Kathy decided that we were going to go out there together and approach this head on. Because it's like the story of the Bible of the lost sheep. You know, we had 99 and one went away. Well, we had the reverse of that. We had one and 99 had gone. So we knew that we were going to have a lot of work once we got there on the island. But before I get to that, I would like to speak about a brother you know very well, Robert Martin. He had plans to come out to the island. Actually, he was coming in 2020 in October. Everything had already been set up. Everything had already been planned. He had already gotten his room and everything. And then when COVID happened, as October approached, he checked with me constantly, maybe 2 times a month, saying, has anything changed? But it did not. But as soon as, again, as soon as he heard that my feet were back on the ground, then he started making plans. The end of January and the 1st of February, he came out to the island. And he stayed with us and worked with the congregation there and presented a very good presentation of Romans. Now, at the time, we didn't know how many people were going to be there. We were able to have an average of about 12 people a night, which is really good for a three-week class. And then I taught a class on Colossians, Philippians, and Ephesians. So that class went very well attended. If you've never been around Robert in the islands, I know that Dan has and others, he has a very big heart for the islands. He's really in his element there. So it was a great opportunity for the congregation there to grow and be strengthened. And it was wonderful, it always is, to see Robert out there with us. During that time that he was out there, we started working on some tracks that a few had been developed by Scott Shanahan. And we went into those and looked at them and updated them, fixed some of the local vernacular in those. And we put together 8 different tracks that could be that are in Pohnpei and were able to be handed out by the congregation. I printed 500 of them, and they barely made it out of the first week that I was there. So we have been working with PIBC, and they're going to print these tracks and send them out to the island on some sort of rotation. So that's going to be a great outreach to see something in their heart language that really speaks to them and really makes those connections. And then on the island of Chuuk, we've finally gotten to this portion that I was leading you up to. This is Joey and his wife. It's a different Joey, not Joey Treat, as you can probably see. But he was very timid and very scared because he had been taught how to present a lesson, how to prepare a lesson, but he didn't have the opportunity to do that before we left. So everything was really theoretical. So he had not yet, even though he had prepared many lessons, he had not yet presented a lesson. So we started working with him and talking with him, and he was ready to step up and preach the lessons that he had been preparing. But as I said before, he didn't have an audience. So we began going across the islands. First, we started with Hermas's sons and started really talking to them about restoration and their responsibility to the church and breaking down those barriers of conflict between each other. And to see what Joey and his family were actually really doing, we're not trying to come in and invade their land, but we're trying to continue the church, trying to continue what their father had started, where their father's heart was. So after talking to them, they were both restored, and they were on board with getting the church growing again, getting it started again. So at that point, we kind of divided roles. Stacy Ferguson focused more on spreading the gospel and on teaching the gospel, and I focused more on trying to restore some of those that had fallen away, some of those that had gone away. We had a lot of studies during that time, and then every night we would have the PIBC classes. We really, when we went, we had no clue if our PIBC classes would have one attendance or how many we would have. But our biggest attendance that we had in one night was about 16 different people, and our average attendance was about 10. So that's wonderful to see these people coming back. Some of them were new, but many of them were members that were there before. And we tried our best to break down those cultural conflicts. We had a few that were still a little timid to come back, but many are still continuing to be the core group there to grow. This man you see here, his name was Troy. We kind of used him as a guinea pig, but he didn't know it, and the others did not know it also. The studies that Stacy was having with him, we would bring in some of the other men because we wanted to test and see if they could work as translators. Now, if we had approached them and said, hey, we would like you to translate for us, they would have maybe shown up the first day but then disappeared the next day. But in bringing them in as a group and saying, okay, you're just helping us teach Troy, We were able to pull three translators out of that. And those three translators worked with us every night in Pacific Islands Bible College. One of which was baptized right before in Joey Treat's last trip. And I didn't even know about the man until he had been introduced by someone else there. He was actually a lawyer that was there. So he had very good oration skills, very good speech skills, and very good logical skills. So he was working, we started working with him and asking him if maybe after some work, if he could possibly present some lessons or teach a Bible class. He did a wonderful job translating. And one of the great things that really Robert praised is that they would keep each other in check. The translators would keep each other in check. If there was a word that they didn't know, they were stuck on, they would ask the other two translators that were in the audience. He saw this on Pohnpei, and then this same thing was emulated on Chuuk. So that helped build up their confidence. A lot of times when there's a single translator, they'll be timid about saying a word, and they'll kind of put it in their own phrasing and sometimes mess it up a little bit away from what you're trying to teach. But with the three keeping it in check, and those three were the man that I had just talked about, Anthony, the lawyer, and then we had the youngest son of Hermas, who was named Last, that he did he had translated for me before. And then we had Joey, which was that new preacher. He also did the translating. So that helped them build confidence to be able to speak before each other. And this Troy that I talked about, he obeyed the gospel at the end of the week. And so it's wonderful to have a new member there to help work with the members from the past. Now, I brought this picture just to show you that they really know how to pack a car there. This is one of the vehicles that we brought in. So I think our largest group, including the kids, I think we got 18 people in there one day. That wouldn't fly in the States, but when you're just going the road there, there's not 18 seat belts. But when you're packed that tight, it really doesn't matter. On top of the hill, Kathy also had a children's class that was up there, and she was working to train the lady to teach classes there, and to translate for her. These are the translators that I was talking about. This is Anthony at the top. This is Last here, and this is Joey. And we had some challenging work for them that week, but they did a wonderful job. So I'm getting close to the end of my time now, but 1 minute? All right. So really quickly, our next step that we have coming up, I'm going to be working this fall and the spring as the missionary in residence at Freed Hardeman. I think this is a wonderful opportunity for us because we're going to be able to reach out to these new kids and tell a lot of them about this area of the Pacific that most don't know much about. Not everybody is Dan Jenkins. You know, not everybody knows what all's going on out there. So we're hoping that we can pull more people from that and teach more about that. It also gives me an opportunity to teach a little bit about the islands and put those in reference of the classes. I'm teaching a Life of Christ class and personal evangelism class this fall. So that'll be a great opportunity for outreach and reaching out to them. Now, at the end of that time, we don't know exactly what we're doing. We know we're going back out into the field, but we're not sure whether we're going back into Guam, into this area, or another area, a couple of other mission points that we're looking at. We have a survey trip going in November, and so we're looking at a couple of other places. But even if we're not there physically, I'm continuing to work with the island from here in the States, just as we did in COVID. We were able to, during COVID times, we were able to create a rapport to figure out how things would work without me being there. So we're continuing that. Among that is me training Ricky to be the preacher there. So we're continuing. We're not leaving the work there in the Pacific, whether we stay there or not. We're going to continue to work with them. We're also sending back some funds for them to be able to operate transport, to be able to get people to the congregation there and back, and other things like that. So we really appreciate the support, the continued support from here. And that's not just prayers, but that the financial and everything involved. In fact, your name, the Palm Beach Lakes, is very well known by all of the islanders out there. Even the ones that speak hardly any English, one of them was talking about coming back here to report, and they said, "Oh, Christmas," because y'all had helped with some Christmas packages in the past. So they know your heart is with them, and we appreciate your continued prayers. Thank you all very much.